We ended davening a little bit late today, so I'll have a little bit of a brief Rashi. But we're going to switch Rashi. Normally we do Rashi on Friday, but some people don't get it on time. And in Australia, the timing's off, so we're going to read Rashi on Thursday. And then Friday we'll just return to the regular whatever Seder we're learning. We'll start Hilchos Shiva. Come, Akiva, come. We'll start Hilchos Shiva next week. So Rashi in this week's Parsha, the Torah in Parsha Kitese, one of the mitzvahs it describes, is a mitzvah on a chasan to be happy with his wife for the first year. And that first year's mitzvah is so crucial that it even exempts him from the army. The first Hesder. Right? This is Hesder where you serve in the army and you learn yeshiva. That was Hesder where you serve in the army and you celebrate with your wife the wedding for the first year. Of course, you don't serve in the army at all, and then you serve afterwards. And when the Torah describes the happiness, and sometimes these subtle changes can convey significant changes in meanings. What's the word to be happy? L'smoach, v'samach. So you think the Torah would say, he's free for a year, v'samach im ishto. He should be happy with his wife for that year. What does the Torah write? Not v'samach im ishto, but v'simach es ishto. It's Allah, so it's important. The faith, v'simach nuchasa, v'simach es ishto. So Rashi comments on the difference between v'samach and v'simach. Yismach es ishto. He should make his wife happy. V'targumo, Rashi quotes the Targum, V'yachti yas itase. You should make your wife happy. So this is the quintessential happiness in the Torah, and yet the Torah doesn't describe it as your personal happiness. It describes it as making other people happy. So what is it? Are you making other people happy, or are you yourself happy? Is it v'simach, or is it v'samach? The answer is the ultimate happiness, the happiness that's most selfless, the happiness that should make you the happiest, is when you're causing other people to be happy. So there's a hidden message here, not just about a chassan and a kala, but about happiness in life. Some people, for happiness in life, they want to acquire, they ask how they can be happy. Their happiness is pivoted on their own identity. And giving people, and part of life is becoming a giving person, not a taking person, giving people is their true happiness. People will say, I'm not giving enough in life. I'm not happy. I'm a giving person. People don't have a chance to give. They're not happy. Sometimes when people get depressed, I say, one of the easiest ways to break out of a rut or psychological inertia is to go do a chesed. And when you give to someone else, it could be a small act of chesed, smiling, saying good morning, be larger acts of chesed. Ultimately, if you're looking for the real happiness, it sounds difficult because when you're young, these things don't sound like they converge. As you get older, you realize there's a convergence. Real simcha is v'simach. Real simcha is when you're able to cause other people happiness, and the Hasan Kala situation is chosen as almost a prototype or a template to portray that. And of course, the next pasuk, and in Kitetze, you always have to be sensitive because every pasuk is a different mesechta, not a different parak, is a different mesechta. That's how quickly the shifts are to try to find connections between one pasuk and another. Not that easy. Some Rishonim, they say we can't find the connections because there are so many different mitzvahs. But the next pasuk, after describing the simcha between a chasan and a kala that's selfless, not the samach, but the simech, is lo yachavol rechayim varachem ki nefesh hu chovel. Is sensitivity to other people when you're their lender and you could take collaterals. You shouldn't take collateral for items that are very vital to their livelihood. In this case, you shouldn't take their millstone that they use to grind grain and to create flour for bread. You shouldn't take their microwave. You shouldn't take their cell phone. You shouldn't take their automobile. Take some extra blanket they have. Take some old basketball they're not using anymore. And you see the transition from selflessness that causes happiness to selflessness that triggers sensitivity and compassion and lack of greed. So at the core of all these traits is a selflessness. One expression is happiness. Another expression is sensitivity to the plight of another who's vulnerable because he needs your money. He's a borrower. You're a lender. That's always a moment of vulnerability. So that's one aspect that's conveyed by this Rashi. What's also conveyed, not so much by Rashi, but it's conveyed by the overall structure. Why does the Torah describe simcha, the ultimate simcha, the paradigmatic simcha, the simcha between chas and kala, which is the model and the blueprint for all simchas, why does it describe it in the context of army exemptions? Very strange. You'd think that simchas chas and kala should be important enough that it warrants its own context. Look at Shir Hashir. It forms the baseline of the entire relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael. And yet the only time the Torah mentions outright Simchas Chasan V'Kala is in the context of being exempt from the army. Why is this happening? The answer possibly is because we think of Simcha, whether it's self-absorbed Simcha or selfless Simcha, as a state of being. Am I happy? Am I not happy? If I'm happy, I can share the happiness with others. If I'm not happy, it's hard for me to be happy and cause other people to be happy. Of course, I describe what the source of your happiness is, whether it's selfish or selfless, but ultimately I have to reach that state of emotional happiness to cause other people to be happy. Serving in the army isn't a mental or emotional state. Serving in the army is a job. You show up on days if you feel like it, you show up on days you don't feel like it. It's discipline. In fact, at the core of the army is discipline. The boys who joined Hesder a few weeks ago, they're still in the stage called Tironut. In Tironut, you do nothing, right? So you do nothing. It's just busy work. But you build discipline in the soldiers. If they ask your officer to go to the bed, they ask you to scratch your nose, literally. You send them to stand there for an hour without being able to scratch your nose or wipe your eyes, just to teach you that self-discipline, because in the army it's absolutely crucial that you have discipline. Everyone's not walking in different directions when there's a war or chas v'shalom in any operation. You have to be in lockstep. You have to follow orders blindly. So the army is not about emotional, it's about a job. And sometimes you're prepared emotionally for the job, sometimes you're not prepared emotionally for the job. You just show up and do it. That's what a job is. Well, believe it or not, that's what simcha is also. That's what responsibility, being the adult in the room, is. Sometimes as a father and sometimes as a husband, you're really happy and you're in a good state of mind. You really, sometimes you're really in a bad shape and you're having a hard day and a lot of stress. That doesn't excuse you from the responsibility to cause your wife simcha. Because so obviously the ideal simcha would be walking hand in hand along the river, along the Thames River, or along in Paris, walking along with romantic fireworks going off in the background and being so happy. And then some days aren't fireworks, some days are just fire and smoke, and it's not so easy. And that's why the Torah presents the mitzvah of simcha alongside of the army. Hopefully, you shouldn't spend your whole life, oh, it's my job to cause people happy. I'm depressed. I'm not happy. Obviously, you want there to be happiness and authenticity, but it's not always going to be that way. And life isn't always peaches and cream and fireworks and romantic flowers. Sometimes you're not happy, but it doesn't excuse you from doing your job and making other people as best you can happy, being the baseline for them and being the system of support. It's very interesting, A, the language, the simach, not the samach, B, the context, being exempt from the army. Another interesting issue, the mitzvah of shechacha. Okay, the Torah describes the mitzvah to deliver whatever grains you forgot when you were collecting. Without getting into the details, what counts as shechacha, what doesn't? Fascinating that the Torah would list a mitzvah about forgetting. So first of all, before I get to Rashi, it's important to realize that the ability to forget is also something we have to thank Hashem for. When in life is it important to forget? Well, first of all, when people suffer terrible tragedies. I just attended a simcha this week of a young woman who, chas v'shalom, suffered a terrible, terrible tragedy a year ago. And Baruch Hashem just got married. Beautiful, beautiful chasana. It wasn't a dry eye in the house. Everyone's crying. They're handing out the tissues, handing out the tissues at the Shmuel's board. And it was just incredible to see the resilience of the human spirit, to see how HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives people the ability to recover from suffering, And part of it is forgetting. Part of it is not forgetting. I don't care about my past, but part of it is being able to move on. And people that can't forget, they have sometimes very, very difficult emotional stress in their lives. And when people don't die, you don't forget them. That's why Yaakov had such a struggle, because at some level Yosef is still alive. So in Shemayim, metaphysically, he can't forget him. People have a hard time forgetting. People have a hard time forgetting and letting loose. It's called OCD, where you have to do this, and I can't let go. So the ability to let go and to forget, the only two things in life you can't do on your own, you need Hashem to help you with. You can't force yourself to forget something. I'm going to forget this. I'm going to make sure to forget this. Well, that's a pretty quick way to remember something. Try to take an idea and forget it actively. You can. It's a gift Hashem gives you. And some people have a harder time using this gift because their mind is too tenacious. They don't hold on to everything. And I think using the gift to let things fall. The other thing that you can't do on your own is fall asleep. Right? I'm going to fall asleep. Normally, I can lift weights. I put extra effort in, and I'll lift extra weight. I'll put extra effort in, and I'll learn more. Put extra effort in, and I'll be nicer, give more stock up. But you can't put more effort into sleeping. These are the two experiences that you have to let go and let HaKadosh Baruch Hu fill in the void and fill in the blanks. Hashem gives a mitzvah. So we make a bracha before we go to sleep. Hashem gives a mitzvah that has to do with forgetting, to remind us. Sometimes it's important to forget. Someone hurts your feelings. Try to forget it. Try to look past it. Try to move on. When's the last time you wish you could forget something? Now, again, you can't actively forget, but you can try not to hold on to something. And just thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give me the power to lose hold on something. But there's another reason, and Rashi talks about this as delivering a message about stata. Because when the Torah describes the mitzvah, Shechacha says, Hashem Elokecha b'chol ma'aseh yadecha. Why does the Torah provide this schar and reward announcement, dafka in the mitzvah Shechacha? As I mentioned last night, the Torah doesn't often describe rewards. Yet here, Leman Yivarecha Hashem doesn't tell us exactly what. The Kibbutz of Aim and Shiloh HaKen, it tells us, Leman Yivarechon Yimecha, but it sounds like you'll receive a bracha. Why does the Torah stipulate a bracha? So Rashi says, Ve'avapi shebasal yada shalob miskaving. Even though you fulfilled the mitzvah tzaka without any kavana, you just forgot it. And then the ani came and picked up the shechacha. Kal v'chomer liosa b'miskapin. And certainly if you have kavana in tzaka. So Rashi says, emor miyata, nafla sela miyadov. Let's say you're walking in the street and some money falls out of your pocket. Umatza ani, and the ani finds it. Umispar nispa, harebis barach alo. You become the mitzvah tzaka. Namely, this is an important message about the mitzvah tzaka. Not just about shechacha in general, but you can be mekayim tzaka without knowing it. Money falls out of your pocket. Grains that you didn't collect. You forgot to collect them. And then an ani grabs them before you even remember. You're Mekai Mitzvah Tzedaka. That's strange. How can you be Mekai Mitzvah Tzedaka without even knowing about it? Evidently, in Tzedaka, there are two different poles to Tzedaka. One pole is the morality, the ethics, loving another person, caring for that person, improving your own moral character. Just to contrast this mitzvah of Shechacha with the Gemara in Bavar Basra, I'll just summarize it very quickly. Yochanan ben Zakkai had some of his nephews, and he had a dream that they would lose this year X amount of money. So what he did is, he didn't tell them the dream, but he forced them to give tzedakah for that amount. So let's say it was, I'm just making up the figures, let's say it was $1,000, so he had a dream that they would lose $1,000, so he made them give tzedakah. The problem is they only gave $900. That's all he could collect from them. And Erev Rosh Hashanah of the next year, the Caesar came and collected some tax for them. They got really worried, how much is the Caesar going to take? So Yochanan ben Zakkai came and said, don't worry, they'll only take 100. How do you know? Because I saw a dream, you're only losing 1,000, you already gave 900, so the Caesar's only going to take 100. So they said to him, well, if you knew that we were going to lose 1,000 beginning of the year, why don't you just tell us? What's a big secret? What's a big melodrama? So he said, I wanted you to get stuck at Lishma. If you knew you were losing the money anyway, then you just give the money because, kapara, why should I lose it to the Caesar? I could lose it for tzedakah. I wanted you to give tzedakah without knowing that this money was already lost, and you should give tzedakah lishma. So there is a concept of interesting Gemara in Bava Basra and Daf Yud about delivering tzedakah lishma. Why is there a din of lishma in tzedakah? Because tzedakah is not just making sure that X money arrives at Y address, but it's the moral refinement and the care and the love and the sympathy, all these wonderful emotions and moral improvement that tzedakah enables. But on the other hand, part of tzedakah is just making sure that the money gets distributed fairly and recognizing it's not your money, and as much as you want to gain money, you're part of, first of all, theologically, it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu's money and you're just an agent. And second of all, socially, even if you're an atheist, you want to build a strong society, you don't hoard money. And you can be the biggest atheist in the world, you still want to get tzedakah because it would make a firmer and better society for you to live in. You could have a better penthouse if you have as much money, but society won't be that successful. So there's a certain part of tzedakah that's not about you and moral improvement. It's just, this is not my money and I have to invest. Like, it's an investment in the society around you and in your relationship with the Kodesh Baruch. It's not your money. And that is highlighted, that is punctuated by the fact that you can become tzedakah even though you're not involved consciously. Just your money is now being distributed as it should be. This is not my money. It should be distributed elsewhere and I'm just have the right to give it. And I think that sometimes different forms of tzedakah, you don't talk about tzedakah so much because it's one of the mitzvahs that's hardest to be mechanech, because when you're in grade school, you give a quarter, you give a dime, you give a few cents. It's not really your money, you don't have money. And then you don't really update it because you don't really have, then you become an adult and you have money and you don't really have, we're teaching about tefillah, we're teaching about Shabbos. It's really hard to teach people about tzedakah. People never grow out of the giving a quarter and a dollar. There are two types of tzedakah you give. There's institutional tzedakah, to institutions you really believe in, institutions you really want to support. And, you know, it could be yeshivos, it could be mikvos, it could be shuls, it could be Zion, whatever, Israel. And then there's a tzedakah one-on-one, and then he comes to your door, you see someone. Sometimes it's easier to say, okay, I feel I have to support these institutions, and my money belongs not to me, but these institutions. That's second form of tzedakah when it comes to organizational tzedakah. When it comes to trying to feel the moral elements and the morally refining elements, that's very often more intimate one-on-one. Someone comes to the door, you treat them with respect, you realize their plight, you try to sympathize, you give as much as you can. Although you're in an organization, sometimes there's a lot of idealism that goes into it. So it's interesting, two Rashis. Rashi number one, not v'samach, but v'simach, selfless happiness, and sometimes just making happy people happy, even though Rav Amital would always tell us, that after the Yom Kippur War, which eight boys were killed, that's a very difficult time for him. He said he was broken inside. He was a broken man. He really took it very, very deeply. It was a real trauma for him. And he said, but I had to show courage. I had to show people strength. Because so sometimes, again, you don't want to be manipulative. You don't want to be hypocritical. You don't want to be disingenuous. But sometimes you're not feeling an emotion, but you have to show that emotion or cause that emotion or cause that state. It's not just about what's happening in your heart. Sometimes you have to ask yourself, if you're a father, you know, it's on me. I've got it. I'll take care of it. And even though deep down you're broken, you can't be shattered, you can't be broken inside and then all of a sudden share your... obviously you want to be genuine and authentic. The second part of Rashi is shichacha, in general, the importance of forgetting things sometimes, like let things go sometimes, train yourself not to be so tenacious about everything, you have to let things go and relax and walk away. And second of all, that staka is not just when you're conscious about it, even when you're not conscious about it, you're kind of the mitzvah. Big, big mazel tov. Person that's been a great, great role model for so many of the boys, Betzalel Cohen, those who have just started the yeshiva, Betzalel became a chassan. Betzalel was a madrich, one of our steve madrich, the head madrich, Kohen Gadol, Baruch Shem is a Kohen. And when's the day of the wedding? Day yet? Or Ledala Kislev. Good month for Chassidim. Month for Kislev, a good month for Avamital, somebody then he came on Gimel Kislev, so. Mazel tov, Betzalel. Yasis Okay. You still have to purchase a band for the wedding. We're not good. Don't skimp on the band for the wedding. That's how the Shiva guys have it. We'll do our best, but... Good morning, guys. Good morning. Good morning, Akiva.
Hey, I know that you said multiple times, I've heard that the Torah doesn't talk about all the bugs because it doesn't talk about war. But, like, that pasuk, you quoted it as well as the whole second parak of Shema.
Right, so it's not rewarding all the bugs in this world.
Right, but, okay. But it seems, if I wanted to do the mitzvah, it's saying that you should do the mitzvah in order to get reward. Why does it matter where the reward is?
Right. So, I'm trying to think about where Lichtenstein talks about it. The simple answers, I mean, the Ramban talks about it. Read the Ramban on that parsha. I think he quotes it right now. And the Ramban has all the shikas there in Parsha Shema Negev, I believe. Parsha Shema Negev or before that, to get which one.
Okay.
The simple answer is that the Torah is not presenting the two separate questions. One is, why is there a reward mentioned in the Torah at all? Second question is, where's Olam Haba? Let's focus on the first question right now. First question is, the Torah is not intending to present a reward, rather as a result. The Torah is a recipe for success in this world across the board. So if you keep the Torah under ideal conditions, we don't live under ideal conditions because we live in Hester Panim, but ideally, if you have principles and values and restraint, so then you'll have a successful life and you'll be able to, you know, live life the right way, and part of living life the right way is living successfully materially. The Torah is not presenting it as schar, it's rather, this is the result. Now, where's Olam Haba is a different question, but that's just a very, very brief answer. I'm trying to think,
should I ask, I don't know his name, the Shamish? He's very versed in...
He talks about, but there's the Ramban at some place, I think. It's the Ramban, and quotes the Evan Ezra. I don't know. Good morning, Morty.
Morning. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Rashi here.
Let me just tell the boys in my share what the share is. We ended about 2 minutes ago, so make it 8:17. 8:17 is 3 minutes less than 8:20. 20 and 45 is 9:05. 9:03. Notice I'm 45 minutes after the share ends.